come back. Sometime I'm on a red back jack. Sometime I get a hop in my back. Sometime I'm going over here. Sometime, and my honey come back. Sometime I'm on a red back jack.
Welcome back to the Bear Brief here on the Crusade Channel, the last live radio station standing. Coming to you from the Republic of Texas on this January 7th, 2020. It is your most humble host, Captain Middle America himself, Rick Barrett, bringing you the news of the day and the narrative that'll follow 844-527-8723. CrusadeChannel.com/chat, C-H-A-T, if you want to be a part of the conversation. If you are not a Founders Pass member, CrusadeChannel.com/go. Become one for 30 days for free. Let's bring her on. Miss Magdalene Rose is joining me here on the Bear Brief on the Crusade Channel. Got lots to talk about. First of all, welcome back to the program, Magdalene. How are you? Excellent. we'll see if we can get her back on. Just let me know when she's on, Justin. Try again. Magdalene Rose, welcome back to the Bear Brief here on the Crusade Channel. How are you? Maybe we'll do three times. So she'll join us when she...
Can you hear me now?
I absolutely can. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. I'm glad to have you back on. Let's just get the first question out of the way. Thoughts on yesterday's event?
Well, yesterday's events have really fractured the Republican Party even more. And for me, I feel like it was the excuse a lot of the establishment needed to sort of wipe their hands of Trump. And I understand why, because I think it's made us really look like we shouldn't be governing. And that's what I've heard from young conservatives and from adults, is that it's pushed us into a place where Democrats look more stable than us.
Well, I mean, yes, one day's worth of optics can lead to that, but mm-hmm. but based on an entire summer of Democrats allowing lawlessness and Democrats infighting in the party, and I think people's opinions of that will change once Biden is installed into office, and you're going to see, because everybody on the left has their boogeyman right now. And we see it, and we'll talk about, I'm going to ask you about the social media banning in a moment of Trump, right? It's very easy for everybody to be on the same side, enemy, my enemy is my friend kind of deal. But the one day negates, and I'm pretty sure Trump did like him or hate him, he did a decent enough job for 3 years, but that one action is enough to wipe away that and all that progress?
I don't think that it's wiping away the progress. I think most of the Republican Party always hated him. So they're just going to use this as an excuse. I mean, for the people he's really helped, for Americans, it's not going to wipe away the progress. But I don't think that he made progress personality-wise in getting the establishment on his side ever. And because of this, they're going to say, well, he's just not fit. And because his staffers are resigning, it's not that we're against his people. It's that we just don't think he's the right messenger.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Magdalene Rose, my guest here on the Bear Brief on the Crusade Channel, the last live radio station standing. But at the same time, just a little back and forth, he was elected because the establishment has been so terrible for so long, and we're going to dive. Let's use that to dive into what you messaged me about. Look at what happened in Georgia. Purdue's a good candidate. Loeffler was a terrible candidate overall. She never inspired confidence. And those two senators are the reason why somebody like Trump got elected. At least that's how I've looked at it.
It is. And the even bigger problem I have with Georgia is that obviously something was happening in Georgia all throughout 2020. Obviously, we were losing massive ground in Georgia, and they pulled their ads from Georgia TV stations. They thought they had Georgia in the bag. So who is in charge of the RNC, or what's happening at the RNC where they couldn't tell that Georgia was becoming a solid Democrat state this election cycle? Who was not paying attention at the level they weren't, where we just lost two Senate seats, one of which, you're right, for a good candidate who's won before, within Georgia? It's ridiculous.
Now, here's the thing that I took a lot of slack from after November 3rd, which I'm fine with. But there was obviously some shenanigans. We're not going off the deep end. I'm just going to say there were shenanigans in the way that Stacey Abrams, who is the real governor of Georgia, we must at least acknowledge at this point, because she's gotten everything she wanted with drop boxes, allowing of signature verifications, all that stuff. So she's not only the governor, she's the Empress of Georgia, because everything she's wanted, she's gotten. And it really shows why people went after somebody like Trump, because the Georgia GOP, encompassed by Raffensperger, has capitulated time after time after time, probably because they always thought, well, it doesn't matter if we give her the drop boxes, it's red Georgia. We don't have to worry about the signature verifications because it's red Georgia. And they never were aggressive. They were always on the defense, and she just steamrolled the entire GOP in that state because that they focused on that state after it.
They did, and this is something I've heard Republican consultants, especially in Nevada and Georgia and areas in Michigan, talking about. They're saying, before the election, Democrats were pushing through massive law changes. They were pushing through massive collection of ballot changes, and they were doing it all through the courts, and they just could not get anybody at the Trump campaign or the RNC to pay attention to it. There was one man in Nevada who was saying pretty much the entire system of how they collected ballots changed within 2 weeks because of the Democrat leak. Challenges and Democrat judges pushing it through. And to me, I don't understand how we talked about ballot harvesting and ballot fraud all those times before the election, and no one was mentioning the massive legal changes that people like Stacey Abrams have pushed through and people in Nevada have pushed through to make solid red states blue and now purple and now blue.
You're listening to Magdalene Rose here on the Bear Brief on the Crusade Channel, the last live radio station standing, always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com. Now, the Trump campaign did at least try in Pennsylvania, but we ran into a problem where the SCOTUS just kicked it back. And I think the Trump campaign's idea was, if we can get this decision in Pennsylvania, then we can use that to kind of run the table in Michigan, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada. So once that first one was kicked back for whatever, you don't have there's no reason, there's no standing, whatever kind of legalese they were throwing at them. They kind of just threw up their hands because there was if SCOTUS wasn't going to look at that one, and we've seen post the election that even lawsuits that anybody looks at and goes, okay, that at least deserves to be heard, have just been booted, and it's a complete failure of the judicial system.
It is, and I really don't understand why, with the amount of brilliant constitutional lawyers we have in the Republican Party and just who are conservatives, I don't feel like we had the best legal team working for this. A lot of it was showmanship, and a lot of it was not a true explanation of the facts of what has happened and why there was at least a case to reevaluate certain ballot collecting practices. We had this group of lawyers for the Trump campaign, not all of them, but some of them, who really seemed much more interested in building their profile than laying out constitutional legal challenges. And as a voter, I've asked why that's happened, and people in the conservative movement are very upset when you say, this was not the best group of people out there. I don't understand why we didn't have better constitutional lawyers out there.
Okay, and that let's just dovetail that into the next part that we were going to talk about. Between the lawyers and the personalities that emerged after November 3rd, who were fighting for President Trump, I don't want to name names. I don't want to put you in that spot by naming names. I have issues with almost every single one of them being political grifters. I've called them out on many occasions. Everybody's kind of looked at me and just kind of shrugged it off. But they really have shown that the conservative movement, because we're so desperate, and this is something I've identified from the beginning, because we're not big in popular culture, because we're not big in academia, the first person that kind of comes our way and winks and repeats the talking points, we just fall head over heels for. And they use that, and they really do grift us. And it depends on who you're talking about in mind for grifters, but Georgia was just a perfect breeding ground for that type of grift to take place. And what do you think? how that impacted, because it looks like about 300,000 less people voted in the runoff versus the general. And so just putting those two things together.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It is the despotism of the right, and it's why we give up positions to people who are not qualified simply because they're nice to us. I've spoken to many door knockers in Georgia, a lot of young people who were door knocking because they're pro-life and they wanted to spread that. And they were told over and over again when they went to door knock, well, you know, President Trump says it's rigged, and these people, you know, we all know who was in Georgia saying these things. They said my vote won't count, so I don't want to feed into a broken system. No Democrat was told that. Every Democrat who wanted to vote went out and voted. There was no question of whether or not it would count. So in Georgia, instead of having Georgia become a battleground state where we had the greatest minds and the most professionalism, we had people holding rallies saying, stick it to the RNC, don't vote for Trump, don't vote because they didn't support Trump and all of this. And Trump sort of going there and telling people to vote. But what I've heard is that people thought, honest to God, that they were not going to have their vote counted. And when you think that, you don't vote. And that's what we're facing in Georgia, especially in the case of Loeffler, because she had so little support and so little even name brand recognition within Georgia. People felt like they had to protect Trump rather than the Senate. And I don't feel like the Trump campaign fought enough against that.
Okay. I will respectfully, just for the sake of debate, push back on the fact that, kind of connecting to the point we talked about before with Stacey Abrams, how she ran the table. And I was telling people for weeks, listen, you have to hold your GOP accountable and change the playing field somehow. Because I don't know how soon it was after the election, but Georgia Secretary of State said, yeah, we're going to use the mail-in ballots for the January 5th runoff. And I'm screaming, you're going to get the exact same result. You got to change the field. So I didn't mind, because the only thing the GOP had was their vote. The only thing these voters had was their vote to try and change the outcome, because they were going to walk in. They were going to basically be the Washington Generals to the Harlem Globetrotters again, because they're going back into the exact same circumstances that led them into the disaster, the travesty that happened on the 3rd. So in the end, I don't mind it, because that's what Democrats do. Democrats will say, you either change this or we're not voting for you. And they get results with their candidates by doing that. So I think we could have gotten something. I don't mind the tactic of saying, you guys have to change this up because it doesn't benefit us as GOP voters. Although the internal fight over that, I do agree, did kind of kneecap them in the end, because there was no, as you said, unified message.
No, there wasn't. And even with that, I don't think the RNC cares. And Democrats, like you said, Democrats get their politicians to change things through withholding their vote or withholding their support. I don't think the RNC works that way. You know, in 2010, you had the Tea Party movement. We thought we were going to take control of everything because you had all those Tea Party people. That didn't happen. The RNC, as long as they have enough people, and they'll always have some people elected, and they go to the right parties, they don't really care what happens to everybody else or what they're saying in the voting. So honestly, Republicans, I don't know how Republicans fight against the RNC, because if they didn't care in Georgia, if they didn't care when they had the Senate on the line for Mitch McConnell to keep his job, why would they care going forward?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing post-Trump is that, you know, Mitch got his judges, everybody in the, you know, the GOP got an increase of seats in the House. They got whatever they needed out of Trump. So they were more than fine to be like, oh, he didn't win? Whatever. We'll quote unquote get him in 2024. And I've been saying that Mitch is just desperate to be back in the minority party because he's done running things, because it's a lot of work. So he needs a couple of years off. And also, it's much easier to fundraise, Magdalene, when you're in the minority party. Because you're like, oh, well, if you don't give me money, I can't fight, instead of being in the lead where people will go, well, why aren't you getting things done? So I think the RNC, after getting their judges, after getting a little more seats in the House, were more than happy to just push aside voters. And I don't know, the talk of a new party is always fun. We do this every 4 years and nothing ever happens. But and so what is the option? To try and primary these people out? Where do we go from there?
And that is the question. And to primary people out, if the thing is we've lost the House, we've lost the Senate and everything, is 2022 really the time to try to primary everyone out and have a complete slate of people who've never run for office before and trying to retake the House? And that's going to be the question in 2022, the talk of a new party. It does happen every 4 years, but I think it's even more intensified now because people are so angry about the Trump side. And I've thought a lot about what Democrats did this election cycle, and they really just marketed Biden as a return to normalcy. So if we're trying to push a third party from the Trump face of the Republican Party, all it does is make that easier for Democrats. It makes it easier for Democrats to say, we are the stable hand of the country. We are the stable guiding force. We can get you what you need, and we have all this unification. For Trump to have a third party, if he wants a third party, he's one of the few people in the world who could have it and make it a real contender. But it might cost us everything for several election cycles.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is an interesting time, at least on this side of the aisle. We already know Biden will be in office for like a year and a half just to make everything look nice. Then Kamala will trip him one day and then she'll be in office for the other remaining years. It's pretty much that schedule is already played out. We just have to watch it in real time. But on the right, we got a lot of stuff to figure out because the party of Trump is the party of the future for conservatism, I believe. And it's really the question of the establishment continuing to fight back or just, you know, being a wolf in sheep's clothing and just using it for its own ends instead of actually benefiting the people that vote for it.
I also think the level of hatred for the establishment Republicans within the Republican Party has reached a new level. And people like Mitch McConnell, people like George Bush and Romney and all of them who sit around and they sort of snipe at the base, they don't understand what they're dealing with. You know, I would rather this party was very, very unified right now. I believe Democrats are more unified than we even think they are because they feel like they've won everything. But the level of resentment, all it's going to take to lose a Senate race going forward is that Senate candidate saying something nasty about Trump in private or public and it getting out to that base. It is a kill switch for every Republican race going forward. And how does the Republican Party reconcile that when half of it severely hates Trump? How do you bridge that divide? Who is that crossover person who can bring everyone to the table? I can't think of anyone who can do that right now.
It's a question we'll all have to dig deep into. All right, Magdalene Rose, thank you for joining me. It looks like we're running out of time. Let everybody know where they can find you on the socials.
Sure, you can find me at Magdalene Rose, M-A-H-G-D-A-L-E-N Rose on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and my show, The Magdalene Rose Report, on the Mixed Files YouTube network every day, every Thursday at 5 p.m.
All right, Magdalene, thanks for coming on. We'll talk soon.